Paradise Vibes only.
Hey, everybody out there. Welcome into another edition of the Paradise Vibes Only podcast, episode number 8, guys. Believe it or not, we are moving along on this thing. We always call it the PVO podcast for short, and we are brought to you by dbhrderby.com. That's dbhomerunderby.com. We generally keep this show very light. We try to have a good time. This episode, we're going to go in a slightly different direction, but it's a conversation that it needs to continue to be had everywhere. We're going to talk about the killings of George Floyd, Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, systemic racism, the protests that continue to take place all over this country and the world, because these are conversations we got to keep going. And this particular podcast, I think, is a perfect place to have this conversation because, as always, we have Todd Isaacs and Lucius Fox, the co-host here on the show, two guys that did not grow up in this country, moved here in high school, so experienced life as Black athletes, as Black men growing up in a different country and then moving here to Florida for their high school years. And then joining the show this week, Will Benson, prospect for the Cleveland Indians, first round pick back in 2016. And Will, unlike those guys, did grow up in this country, in the South, in Atlanta. Will, thanks for coming on, man.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, guys, for having me. It's going to be fun.
All right, before we get into the race discussion and what's going on right now and tying it to baseball and all of that stuff, Will, we should talk about just you and your baseball career as well. So, started to kind of dig into your season last year. 4 home run game last April, which I watched the reels of that. It was pretty cool. But overall, 22 homers, 27 stolen bases, showing the athleticism. Just talk about your journey to this point, how you feel about, you know, this season obviously is kind of a tough one, but how do you feel about the journey so far?
It's been a blessing because it's made me the man I am today. A lot of ups, a lot of downs. And a lot of learning. I would say for sure it's a blessing to be in, you know, in contact with guys like Todd and like Lucius. I realized that in baseball you get connected with so many great people and so many great guys. So yeah, that's what it is.
Hey, for you guys who've never seen Will play baseball before, he hits the ball like it's a golf ball every single time. He might get out a lot. He's probably one of the most unlucky players I've seen in baseball in my career thus far. But he doesn't miss. He doesn't miss. Ever. And he hits the ball a mile. So, the 4 homer game, I was watching it on – I was watching, again, the Twitter updates. And I was also texting Andrew Luffglass, the play-by-play announcer for Lake County when this was happening. So I remember he hit one homer. Boom. So I was like, damn. Okay. First at bat. Scores up by a lot. So it was like the second or third inning when you were hitting again. and then you see it again and boom, another homer. So I was like, damn. So I remember texting Lou. I was like, yo, Will got D2 for 2 with 2 bombs already. Lou was about to play his game that day. And as Lou was playing, I was still texting him, like, we were still having a conversation right then. I was like, Will just hit a third one. I say, I bet my life he hit a 4. And I'm texting up class. I'm like, yo, he's going to hit a 4th one right there. And boom, he hit a 4th one. I was like, the score now is like 30-0. So I know he's going to get a 5th one. So I was like, if he hits a 5th one right now, they need to call him straight up from Lake County to the big leagues. Let him make the 30-minute ride to Progressive Field in downtown Cleveland, because that was one of the most impressive things I've ever seen. And it was I didn't see it, but listening to Luffglass call it, it was incredible.
Will, take us through that, bro. What was your, like, how did you feel, bro? Obviously feeling, but take us through from the day you got to the ballpark to all of us later.
I could bet any money you had Chipotle or Chick-fil-A for lunch that day.
I had Chipotle because guess what? I wasn't playing that day. I wasn't supposed to play that day. And because my girlfriend was there. So I texted her, I said, hey, like, I'm not supposed to be in the lineup today. Probably gonna go grab some Chipotle and, I mean, you can come a little bit later if you want. Like, later, you don't have to be there all the time. She was like, okay, cool. So she actually, I think she might have missed the first home run, to be honest, because like she didn't expect me to play.
And hey, before he continues, every time his girlfriend visited him and we played together, he hit a homer. every single time. Not like 5 for 6 or 3 for 4. Every single trip, he's hit a homer.
But no, so yeah, back to the day. So like I said, I get in. He said, "Hey, man, you know, so and so's down. We need you in." So I said, "Okay, cool, whatever." And then, you know, there the grind starts. And then I go to my early work, you know, do the same thing. Everything's normal. You know, honestly, I don't remember BP, but I feel like a pretty super normal day. And then I didn't remember. So the first at bat, it was 3-2. I got it to 3-2. I had foul one off. And then he threw, I said, he's going to try to beat me here. And he threw me a fastball. Wham, I got him. And then, like, as I'm running around, I'm like, okay, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. You know, you get your little height, you know, whatever. I think it was like a, it was actually, funny enough, almost had a cycle for like RBIs. Like I had 1-2 or 1 solo, 2 run, 3 run, or grand slam. I needed a 3 run. So I was sitting there and I was like, man, like, well, I'm feeling good. Let's go to bat two. And I go, if he tries to throw me a fastball, like he's dumb. Like he's dumb. And sure enough, what did he do? He threw one down the middle. Bam. That's number two. So then I'm calling, like, here's number three. I'm on to the third one. And again, this is a guy who had, this is the 10 pitch at bat. And again, I'm batting off his best stuff. And I'm literally battling. And I remember a changeup foul back. I'm like, bro, this is literally one of the best at bats of your career. Like, just hang in. So I stayed with my same approach. And it was like a slider, I think, or a curveball or something down. Bam, that's back up the middle. And I was like, oh my God. And if the wind was blowing out this time, I hit it well, but it was like, I looked up, I was like, this is no doubt going
the
out.
Ball disappeared.
No, yeah, because it was nighttime, so you really, like, you couldn't see it, and I was just like, whatever, right? It's kind of, we out. So then the fourth one is probably the most special one, because this kid, Todd, this is the kid who dominated us all last year from South.
Yeah, yeah.
The kind of heavy set one, yeah. And every time he pitched, like he get us all out. We didn't know how, but he got us all out every time.
Loopy curveball.
Yeah, and it's like he had
curveball. His curveball is like 48 miles an hour, but when you hit it, that ain't coming back. That way, I have him in a record book too, so I can vouch for it.
Yeah, so you know, again, this is a guy who's beaten me, you know, all last year, and to the icing on the cake, you know, all my work, hard work paying off. Bam! I mean, it was another one of his good pitches. Outside, he got me, I think, 1-2 or something like that, 2-2. So I'm on the ropes on the back, and bam, and there's the last one. Before.
I don't even know if I would have been able to, like, condemn myself. Like, I'd have been so happy.
Yeah, because I'm walking back to the dugout, and no one knows how to react. Like, I don't even know how to react.
Right.
Like, look, I'm looking at them just like they're looking at me. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know.
So the high five, everyone, and to just put your helmet in the rack.
Yeah, I remember Mitch just held his hand on his bat. Mitch just handed, he was like this. He didn't even give me like a real handshake. He's like, all right. No one dapped me up in the
locker room. Bro, to be honest though, if I could believe anyone could do it, it'd be you, bro. First time seeing you hit, you know, at the first derby is impressive, bro.
Yeah, thanks, man.
Way, way, way out. So just keep doing your thing, bro. You're gonna be in Cleveland soon, bro.
Yes, sir. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Hey, Ross and Tim, I hope you hear Lou right now, what he's doing. He's what? Trying to sweeten Will up so he could steal it from me in the next Homer Derby draft. Like he did with Chavez, but look how that turned out. No. Episode when he said he's going to steal Chavez from me. And what did Chavez do? Hit 3 homers.
Bro, I'm not gonna try to steal. We're real loyal to you, bro. I'm gonna just
not loyal,
you.
Yeah.
You it's know, he already told me he's loyal to you. You know, he's personal. Yeah. So you can all respect it.
You know, with Will telling a 4 homerun story, I've witnessed almost 30 homeruns the year before when he did it. And that's why he's been my first round pick the past 2 drafts. He's going to be my first round pick again this year. Ooh, ooh. Well, not my first round pick. My first pick, because it's only one round. He's my first pick of the draft. Will Benson, 30 in a row. Hopefully.
I might just draft him and sell him to Utah because I know you want him. You got to pay me a good price for him, Todd.
Boy, that'd be... I pay top dollar.
But nah, bro, You're the truth, bro. You're strong, and you hitting the ball way out, bro.
Way, yeah, man, way out. That. Y'all got us though. That's the only thing I don't like. We lost.
Yeah, it's all good, bro. Get used to it. You want to be 10-12 for life, so get used to it.
Stop it, bro.
The business gonna come again soon.
Exactly. We're gonna bring it back.
All right, fellas. Awesome stuff from last season, and it doesn't take long for Lou and Todd to get back to the Home Run Derby on this show. It seems to come up. Like, I try to push it back towards the end of the show, but it always seems to come up. Those are better times for a lot of different reasons, but we are in the midst right now, obviously, of some changing times around this country, and brought on by tragedy and some awful events, but protesting and things are taking place right now. And I think overall we're moving in the right direction. So I'll help guide this conversation, but really it's you guys that I want to be the main part of this thing. But let's go back first to kind of, you know, where it all began. Obviously there was in short order, the three tragic deaths, Breonna Taylor, Ahmaud Arbery, and George Floyd. Floyd, the video, of course, in Minneapolis that everybody has seen or everybody should see. And then now the worldwide kind of protest over this, over police brutality, over racism, Black Lives Matter coming to the forefront. But let's start by going back to that video. I'll go to you first, Todd. Just when you first saw it and saw that was something that could, and I mean, I think we all know it's happened in this country before, but to see it that clearly now, it seemed to be a difference maker as far as getting people and get a movement going. What was your reaction initially, Todd, when you saw it?
I couldn't believe it. I thought it was something straight out of a movie because it was so, you know, you hear more of the stories than you actually see videos of them. But thankfully now, with, you know, everyone taking out their cell phones to record everything, we all now get to see exactly what people have been talking about for years. And to see that happen, it was scary for me because I know it could be anyone that looks like me in that position. And it could be for something very small, you know, something small that escalates quickly and it turns into, you know, the brutality that you see every day, that you see so commonly. And, you know, watching that video, I think, for me, being here in the Bahamas and being a Bahamian, I felt that, like, as if I was born in America and raised in America all my life. Like, that was someone that I grew up with right down the road. Like, that was my uncle. Like, that was a friend of mine. And it was just so harsh because it happened for so long. Like, his initial arrest didn't start right then and there when he was on the floor. So much transpired up to that point that honestly was no need for it. He was already handcuffed. He was laying face down in the ground. It really hurt seeing that because it could have been avoided, you know. And it was three other officers there that really didn't get in the way to help him or, you know, just be that guy to say, hey, you know, this ain't right. Like, you got to get up off him. But no, it didn't happen. And to watch that, it was very scary, very, very scary.
And it's kind of obviously it started this protest, and it feels different than protests in the past. President Obama even said recently something different here when comparing the civil rights protests in the 60s to this, because those protests were predominantly African Americans protesting, where this seems to be everybody getting involved. What happened was truly horrible, Will, but do you feel like the reaction that we've seen across this country is going to, is going to change things?
Absolutely. I actually was just at a walk this past weekend, and to see everybody, you know, of different color, different background, you know, all together in unison, you know, going towards something. Again, I wasn't back, you know, in the 60s, but my parents are saying the same thing of that this feels different, and this is different. I think that we can get to a solution. I think a solution needs to be put into effect because it's been too long. This is something that has been lingering, you know, in this country for far too long.
It's crazy, man. Just going back to the George Floyd video, I remember first seeing it, I was scrolling on Instagram and I saw a picture first. Then I saw, I think Meek Mill had posted, and I saw the video, and initially I saw him like on face down with the cuffs on and, you know, the officer on his neck. And at first, I was thinking from early on, before he even passed out, I was like, man, he's trying to kill this man. You know what I mean? And the officer just had his, you know, he had no pity. You heard George Floyd saying he can't breathe. You know, like, he just crying for help, literally just crying for help. And the man just, you know, kept his foot on his neck. And like Todd said, the other officers there didn't even step up to say, man, you're taking it too far. You know what I mean? Because, you know, you always want to do the right thing. Being a police officer is a hard job, but you just want to do the right thing. And when you have a guy who, you know, you already have him handcuffed and down and he's defenseless now, I just feel like they took advantage of him. And, you know, it's a bad thing to see, you know. And I'm just happy for everyone just rallying and, you know, trying to make a difference, you know, not only the Black community, but, you know, the white people too. My white brothers and sisters are standing up, you know, speaking out. And I feel like we only can make a difference if we all come together. I don't feel like just the Black community can make a difference in this world. We need our white brothers and sisters to stand by us also. So it's good to see all races come together. And it's so powerful, man. It's so powerful, man. I feel like we can get a lot done. Honestly, I feel like we can get a lot done. And I'm looking forward to see what the powers that be put in play to, you know, serve to be equal for all. You know what I mean? That's all we ask for, just to be equal to everyone. We're all humans at the end of the day. So just treat us all the same. That's all we ask for. We don't ask any special privileges, you know?
To everyone out there listening, I would vote Lou for mayor right now. That was so, so heartfelt and so from the soul that I felt that. So if I could feel it, I know y'all who listening right now, y'all felt that.
that was so perfectly said.
Don't hype me, bro. I'll buy a suit and tie tomorrow.
Will, I wanted to ask you, because growing up here in the United States and down in Atlanta, when you were growing up, did your parents talk to you about just what you were going to have to deal with when you were out on your own and you know what you should be doing? For instance, if you get pulled over by the police when you're driving a car, or if you're approached in any time by a police officer, did they have that talk with you?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I had that talk, I think, going maybe in middle school, I think it was. It started kind of early. And I know a lot of my friends, because I was in a private school, you know, in Buckhead. So I was in a whole different environment, and I knew those kids weren't having that in that talk. And it, you know, it's one thing for being a parent, like, you know, checking in, like, hey, where you at? You know, I mean, that's normal. But it'd be when I'm just going down the street to go get, you know, some gas or something, they check. I'm like, I don't think, you know, people of other race have to worry about that, like, at all. And it was kind of weird, because again, I grew up in two different environments. So once I got immersed into, you know, the different race, I'm in a predominantly white, you know, high school, it's like, still, my mom's like, that doesn't give you a safe, you know, you're not safe because you hang out with those kids. You're still going to be the outlier. You're still going to be the person of interest just because, you know, you're Black, you know, you're different. And you got to make sure, you got to make sure that, you know, you always keep your eyes on the swivel. And it's like, that's no way to live. You know what I mean? I feel like a lot of my, you know, friends that are white, I think I wouldn't say it's as easy, but it's not as challenging. Like, you don't have to worry about as many things that I would have to worry about. And I think, again, like Lou was saying, it's not necessarily that we want extra privileges or we want something special. We just want to be at peace. You know, we just want to be at ease. We don't want, you know, things to be pre-thought about us before we even, you know, say a word or do anything.
Yeah, you want peace, literally run in your neighborhood, like Ahmaud Arbery, who literally got hunted in broad daylight. That happened in Georgia, where Will lives. So, like, that could happen to any one of us that look like Ahmaud Arbery.
Yeah, and that's the scary part.
Got hunted in broad daylight. Like, I couldn't imagine what that must felt, you know. You left your house to go exercise. You probably told your girlfriend that you're going to hit her up in like 30 minutes and going for a run. And you never return home in your own neighborhood. That to me right there, like, it's scary to even think about that, because it just shows you that people look at you like you don't belong sometimes. And that's not fair. at all.
And then it took so long for those guys to even be arrested and brought
in. Exactly. Only because of the video. Because of the video.
Right. The video is has become so important. And I just wanted to add, as far as the, you know, the talk that you talked about, Will, with your parents, one thing that's come of this is I'm having conversations with family members about this stuff that I never had before. I grew up in a predominantly white town as a white person, and we didn't really talk about it that much, other than, you know, being told by my parents when I was growing up that, you know, everybody's equal and love everybody and you know, your general things. But I was talking to my parents about everything that's going on about a week ago, and my dad actually said to me, you know, when you and your brother were growing up, we never had the talk because you didn't have to have the talk. And that's exactly what he was talking about. He said, when you guys went out with your friends, we would have the general concerns of a parent that you would do something stupid, but that was that you would do something stupid. And that was our worry, was that, like, you know, we would get in a car accident or do something dumb. They never had to worry about us going out and just being out and having something horrible happen just because we were black. And it was, I don't have kids, so I haven't had that thought to have that discussion, but hearing it from my dad was really interesting. And that's something that's kind of resonating with him right now, is that that's something he never had to worry about and he didn't have to tell us about. And it's just another thing that it's just wrong. And it's kind of, I'll talk about a lot of things as we go here that have opened up my eyes in the last 2 weeks that, you know, frankly, I'm embarrassed that it's taken this long for me to realize some of these things, but it's good that I realize them now.
I feel that, Tim. I personally learned a lot over the past 2 weeks. You know, growing up in the Bahamas, I didn't really have a talk with, you know, about my parents with racism either, because we didn't really experience that in the Bahamas, you know. But I learned a lot just by hearing guys speak and, you know, about history, you know, things that I didn't know in the past. But I think we just thought it was normal. You know what I mean? This how it's been for about 400 years. So we just realizing that this isn't normal. You know what I mean? Like, we just be going around day to day. Like Will would say, his parents having a talk with him, they feel like they should have that with their kids. Like, that's a normal thing to do. You know, so now I'm proud to see that we realize and we're opening our eyes and we're seeing that, man, this can't go on any longer. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't normal. You know what I mean? We deserve the same privileges or the same treatment. And, you know, we just got to keep on learning. Everyone, you know, even if you don't feel like we're being treated different, you know what I mean? Just listen. You know what I mean? Let's listen to what the black community have to say. You might learn something and it might change your point of view on things, you know?
And you know, with the talk, obviously, there's the reality of it. So I'll ask that of all three of you guys. Have you had an experience where you had to think to yourself, okay, I have to do everything correctly here, or this could go bad? I know we've had pro athletes talking about it. Torrey Hunter talked about the fact that he got home one night and accidentally set his alarm off at his home out in LA, and the cops showed up and pulled their guns on him just because they thought, this can't be your house. And this is Torrey Hunter. This is a guy who's like famous at that point, you know, he was playing for the Angels, and it's just unbelievable. But have you guys, each of you can weigh in, but have you had those experiences where you were legitimately scared because you knew that you had to handle things perfectly or it could go bad?
No, I have not had a situation, thank God, yet, you know, that for something to escalate. But definitely, like, I've had multiple times where, you know, I'm by myself, and thank God again that this stuff happens in broad daylight, so, you know, people can see. But I've had a couple times, yes, where I'm like, man, you know, just take deep breaths, make sure that everything is, you know, slow, you know, move slow and steady and always ask. So, yeah, I've definitely had those moments where I have to, you know, come to grips with, like, okay, like, you know, be patient, you know, relax, be calm. Everything's gonna be okay for sure. Every time I get pulled over.
Yeah. And just to go off what Will said is, like, I remember growing up in the Bahamas and then going off to school in America, and, you know, some stuff to this day that my parents still, you know, get on me and my brother about. Like, my brother has big afro, and he always asks my parents if he could twist his hair or braid his hair. And my parents being in the Bahamas, seeing what they see every day in the U.S., that's one of the things that to this day that they will not allow any one of us to do, because they feel that, you know, with being black, it kind of adds to the to the problem even more, because, you know, people still look at guys with dreads or braids that walk down the road as someone that's suspicious. So to them, they see that, you know, that's one of the things that we should stay away from, because it will help keep us alive. You know, in America, it isn't, it may have been a very, very stereotypical years ago, but now it's regular. You know, you see guys on TV, you see celebrities, you see a lot of black guys in America, African-Americans, people of color that have twists, that have braids and have dreads, and it's kind of regular now. But that was one of the things that, you know, you had to really worry about too growing up. That was a decision that you had to think long and hard on, because of the stereotype that comes behind it, a black guy with dreads, a black guy with braids, a black guy with plaits, is someone that could be, you know, a criminal, someone that could be a gangster, someone that could be a whole heap of things. So, you know, that's one of the things that my mom and dad to this day don't let us do, you know, as bad as, especially my brother, as he wants to do it, is something that he just can't, because of how scared they are, you know, being a black man in America with braids. As crazy as that sounds, as simple as that sounds, that's just one of the things, you know, coming from the Bahamas, with us not being in it every day, but seeing how it happens, that's one of the things that they want us to stay away from, you know. And going off of what Will said, you know, being pulled over, you know, from very early on, they told me, you know, just stay calm, you know, let them be in control of the situation. Yes, sir, no, sir. Hands always visible. And that's something that, you know, you still have to do today, because you just don't know. You just don't know.
Did you guys know before you moved here, Todd and Lou, kind of what you were going to have to deal with here as black athletes, as black high schoolers in this country, or was it a huge wake-up call when you arrived?
Huge wake-up call. Growing up in the Bahamas, we never really, well, speaking for myself personally, I never really paid attention. You know what I mean? Like, once I got here, I started to you know, pay more attention to it, because I had to. You know, I was in America, I had to abide by American laws and learn history and everything like that. So our first initial thought about moving to the United States was just an opportunity, you know, chasing our dreams and, you know, becoming professional baseball players. And once we got here, we started to learn more about like, what's going on in society and the day-to-day life. But early on, we never really paid, well, speaking for myself, I never really paid much attention to racism.
I personally, I learned quickly from my first day at school at American Heritage. You know, it was an unfamiliar territory for us. Going to a white school, I myself could say that a predominantly white school, that it was kind of one of those things where you get then you realize that you don't really fit in. Like it wasn't very many people that look like you, teachers that look like you, people in positions that look like you. So it took some time to adjust to. Like I remember, you know, growing up in the Bahamas, one thing that they taught us from a young age is yes sir, no sir, yes ma'am, no ma'am, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, holding doors open, you know, stuff like that. And like, I just remember my first few years and living in the U.S., I would take it so personal when I would say good morning to someone, good afternoon to someone, especially the teachers and the staff at school, and I wouldn't get a response back. You know, I'd try to be courteous, try to be polite, and it was almost like I was kind of insulting them. So, you know, that was one of the first things early on that was a big culture shock for me. And then it's just learning how to adapt to a new culture, a new system where, you know, everyone isn't provided the same opportunity. You could tell it early on, very early on, like who is who and what is what and how everything operated. I think that was the best part about us, you know, being put into a system, a school system, a education system, an education environment that there wasn't very many people that looked like us. We had to adapt and learn early about how everything operates, what's the how everything goes about on a daily life in the U.S. You know, and we learn that early. There's so many instances, but you know, all of that is basically how I could sum up, you know, moving to America and my first impressions.
To go off what Todd has said, moving to American Heritage, you know, it's so crazy to think that people can be racist, because us moving as young kids, it's a lot of white people, a lot of white teachers. I have a lot of white friends that showed us a lot of love. You know what I mean? And it just goes to show you that you're taught to be racist. Nobody's born racist. You know what I mean? So it's not, everyone's not bad, you know what I mean? Like, every Caucasian bad. You know, all white people aren't bad, all black people aren't bad. You just gotta understand everyone is just being human. Just take it as that, you know what I mean? Learn the person and go from there. And speaking with the police, I personally haven't had like a bad encounter with the police, you know what I mean? So far, thank God. But I just say that every cop isn't bad. You know what I mean? There's a lot of cops that treated me with respect. You know, I didn't feel like I was in a position to be harmed, but I would be lying to you if I didn't say that I didn't, like, it didn't cross my mind once I saw the sirens behind me or police approaching me. Of course it would cross my mind because I've seen this, I've heard about this millions of times. So being a black person in America, I automatically feel like it can happen to me. But personally so far, and I have God to thank for this, I haven't really experienced a bad encounter with the police.
And it's just so sad to say that because, you know, look at police officers, people who are here to protect and serve the community, you know, serve the people. So, you know, when you call a police officer, you expect them to, you know, handle the situation better than anyone else can, you know, not choose a side. So, you know, stay in the middle, be a mediator, de-escalate situations, and just protect and serve everyone. Now, I feel like a lot of the cases that happened recently have all been in situations that could have been de-escalated, that didn't need a weapon to be drawn, that didn't need someone to be, that have a knee in their neck for 8+ minutes. It you just look at police officers as people who are here to protect us, serve us, and that's all that we want is just the equality, to have the same rights, for people to look at us the same way as everyone else. And, you know, like Will and Lou said earlier, not to have like these immaculate, so far ahead of everyone opportunities and situations is just, we just want equality, and that's it. That's all we want.
Right. Like we were taught to respect police officers. So we feel like we should get that same respect back. You know what I mean? Like you have a gun and a badge, but at the end of the day, you take that gun and that badge away, what are you? I feel like they just don't realize that. They just abuse their power. They feel like they can do anything once they have that uniform on. But I just feel like they just need to take a step back, look themselves in the mirror and realize, man, at the end of the day, without this gun, without this badge, I'm a human just like everyone else.
One thing that I mentioned earlier about like having my eyes opened a little bit, and one of the other things is I always thought like, okay, racism is something that we need to improve in this country. We need to get rid of it. But I always thought of that as, we should love each other, right? Like, but what I've learned over the last couple of weeks is that I have the privilege. I have that privilege that I was given other opportunities that other people weren't. And that's what's kind of been an eye-opening experience, just to realize, I mean, that's always made sense to me, but to really see it and to really see it explained. And I've read a lot about it and I'm reading some books now about it to learn more. It's really been eye-opening, and it's different for everybody, I think, but overall, for black people in this country, you're just up against it. It's a tougher hill to climb.
And it's crazy. I mean, I see it every day, you know, the difference between, you know, my all black travel team versus, you know, the majority white team. I can just go from what I know, and I could just see it, like I said, in the difference, because when I was, you know, 7 or 8, you know, me personally, I was struggling to, you know, make things meet in terms of, you know, I got to pay to be in this tournament. I have to have this equipment. You know what I mean? It's like little things like that these white people are taking for granted, or that they have quick access to, you know, we did. And it's something that's been a mission of mine, is to make it, you know, so that, like, you know, my community can make it. Because it really is so hard, because of the resources aren't as available to us. And it's quite frankly, even when it is presented, it almost feels like a trap. You know what I mean? So it's like, do I really want to get into this or not? So it's kind of tough dynamic. And it's something that's been established from so long ago And, you know, thank God that we are moving towards something better. But it's, again, it's systematic. So this is something that's been put into the system and something that's just been lingering down, you know, from generation to generation. And again, like, thank God for Lou and guys like Todd that really try to go out and make things happen for, you know, their community, places they grew up where they knew that the resources and things available to the kids just weren't, you know, as good as their, you know, their teammates and other teammates.
That's so crazy that you say that, right? Because I'm sure Lou could tell a story on this as well. When we first moved to America, when we first moved to American Heritage, our parents always used to tell us that even before then, even like before when we initially knew that we were, that going to American Heritage was an option, our parents would always tell us that, you know, y'all have to work a lot harder than everyone around you every single day. You have to do a lot more than everyone around you because, number one, coming from the Bahamas, a foreign country. And then, number two, you're going to be a black man in America that's living on your own away from your parents. So you always have to be, you literally have to be perfect. And you always have to outwork everyone. And one thing that they stressed that Will was talking about is like, it's going to be a time where you guys are going to be behind everyone because you didn't have all the same resources. You didn't have all the same options of having indoor cages, indoor places to work out, indoor fields to work out. So, you know, they're going to be ahead of you a little bit more when you initially get there. And they just continue to reiterate that we have to work harder than everyone else around us. And I think from that moment, that's something that's been a part of our DNA since.
And it's great that you have that work ethic, but you shouldn't have, it just shouldn't be something that's needed, you know?
Definitely. But Tim, to be honest with you, Tim, I feel like we won't see change until the powers that be, or, you know, like I said, our white brothers and sisters actually like open their eyes and realize that that's true. You know, it's still a lot of people out here today that don't think that black people have it harder. You know what I mean? And like you said, systemic racism, a lot of people don't see that because they trapped in their bubble. They feel like it doesn't apply to them. So why should they speak out? You know, why should they care? You know, they're good in America. You know what I mean? So once we all come together, I feel like we can really make something happen. And I don't think we'll move anywhere unless, you know, we all join in unity, everyone, every race, you know?
Yeah. It's about like being selfless. And yes, you know, you may be okay, you know what I mean, in America, but there are people that are living here that aren't. And again, I think it's very selfish to only worry about yourself. Again, I go back to the Bible every time, you know, it says, love your neighbor as yourself. And that's so simple. You know, you wouldn't want to see yourself struggle like that. So, you know, be the better person, you know, and again, it's okay, you know, to speak out. And I understand sometimes it's uncomfortable for people to do that, but you know, you got to be uncomfortable to get comfortable.
About the people in the community going, you know, to their regular 9-to-5 job and, you know, just trying to make ends meet. That's what we speaking up for. You know, at the end of the day, you know, once you get to a certain status, you know, you feel a little more protected. You know, you're still going to face some racism, but we're talking about the guys in the community, you know, that don't have a voice, that don't have a platform. That's what we're really speaking up for.
And that's so, and it to magnify what Will said, right? Everyone has heard of the Tamir Rice story, a 12-year-old boy that was shot and killed by police, a 12-year-old African American citizen that was shot and killed by police, a 12-year-old boy. That's, it is no way for you to look at a 12-year-old, a child, a kid, and say, he's dangerous to me right now. There's no way. There's no way. And that's an everyday African American young man, not even a man, a young boy that was killed by police.
But think about this. Think about this. Think about how they did George Floyd. You know what I mean? How they treated him. But I know you remember a couple months back the shooter in Parkland. How did they arrest him? Calm. The man walked off. You know what I mean? He did far worse than what George Floyd did. But why would they, like, why? You know what I'm saying? Why?
And then when they take him to court, they try to say that they're crazy. They're crazy.
Right. Like, come on. Like,
how does that work?
we're not blind. We realize that African Americans and, you know, minorities commit crimes. Everyone commit crimes, but if you can try kids or people different just because of the color of their skin, that makes no sense. That makes no sense, man. Like, come on. Let's be fair here. That's all we're asking for, to be fair. Right. Like a kid that, or a person that killed all these innocent lives, you're all gonna arrest them, call me and walk them off. But George Floyd, who didn't hurt anyone, you can kneel on his neck. Right. Like, it's a big difference there. And it's just not right, man. That hurt, because like Todd was saying, that could be any one of our relatives.
That's what I'm saying. That's a crazy part. It's like when I had the most, you know, eye-opening moment is when I came to the realization that could be me. Like, I could be that hashtag if I was in that situation. Like, it's crazy to think. People don't realize that, like, hey, you know, here's Will, like, your best friend, like the dude you talk with every day, you cereal with. If he's caught in the wrong place at the wrong time, he could be a hashtag just like that. And that's when my eyes really opened to the true issue here.
Guys, we've seen lots of people in the sports world obviously come out. We've seen leagues make statements. Some things that stood out to me, Theo Epstein, who obviously runs the Cubs, came out and said that the majority of the people that I've hired, if I'm being honest, have similar backgrounds as me. They look like me. And that's something I need to ask myself, why. So you're having people asking those questions. We've seen the NFL now, Roger Goodell coming out and saying that the NFL has been wrong in the way they've handled the protesting of things. Obviously, he didn't say the name, but he's clearly talking about Colin Kaepernick kneeling and how Colin Kaepernick was blackballed out of the NFL. And it seems like we're going to see a lot more NFL players probably taking a knee in the upcoming season when they play. But in baseball, I'll shift it back to that. Do you think that we're going to see that sort of silent protest on the baseball diamond? Because it's something that Bruce Maxwell did it with the A's, but that's it. Like, it's something that just hasn't been a big part of the game of baseball protest-wise. Do you think we're going to see that here coming up if we have baseball?
And you know, it's crazy how you said that, right? And how you brought in baseball and everything like that. You know, I've seen something with Delano De Shields this week talking about when he was on the A's a few years ago, that he had a black teammate that kneeled during the national anthem and he just didn't have the courage to do it right then and there. That example right there shows you how hard and how tough it is to be a African American in sports, because, you know, he wanted to do something that would speak volumes to people in the community, people in Oakland, people that watch baseball, people around the world, that he was going to protest police brutality during the national anthem with his teammate during a baseball game, that he just couldn't bring himself to do it because he was scared of what was going to happen to him. Just like Colin Kaepernick, the backlash from it. And that's so crazy and it's so unfair, because it shouldn't be that way. You know, it's the First Amendment, freedom of speech. And at the end of the day, he was peacefully protesting just like Kaepernick. But look at Kaepernick now. He was so far ahead of his time that he wanted to do something peacefully then, knowing what could happen to him tomorrow. And that's been happening to him for the past 4 years. We've seen how awful some NFL quarterbacks are. Look at the Jets, for example. They need a quarterback bad, real bad. Colin Kaepernick could be a great quarterback for the New York Jets right now. So I just say that to say that, you know, the story with Delano De Shields, it speaks volumes, because although he had good intentions, he was scared about what was going to happen to him because he was a African American playing a major professional sport.
But to go back to your question, Tim, I honestly don't feel like baseball, it'll be much protest with baseball, to be honest, because I feel like the game, there's not a lot of African Americans in the game. You know, it's a lot of Latin guys and, you know, white people, but I feel like basketball, NBA and NFL, which African Americans make up most of the league, they will protest more in those sports than MLB. That's just my belief.
Yeah, and it's probably like nerving too. Like I'm probably in the Shields' point. Like if you're looking down, you know, on that foul line, and you don't have many brothers on that line with you.
Exactly. It's like that. That's a true test right there, though. That's like when you really know which one of your teammates and who in the organizations really love you like they say they do, and really support you like they say they do. Like in that moment, that's when you realize what love is. Because if someone loves you unconditionally, like they preach every day, they would be right there with you.
No, that's what I'm saying. So, like, when you're looking down and you realize that, like, you have a like, you're pretty much making a big choice, because then you have to realize, if I go on this knee, I already know they're going to be, you know, they're going to judge me. They're going to say something, because that's the point. Like, why is he kneeling? And it brings attention to yourself. So, you know, again, like, you have that issue too, because, hey, again, like Kaepernick, what if the owner doesn't like that? Or, you know what I mean? And then here you are two games later, and then you're penalized for it. So I couldn't even imagine. That's why I really don't think, you know, in this upcoming year, if they were to have it, that dudes would do it. Because again, it's like, here we are in stipulation with money problems already. You know what I mean? So it's like, here's another, you know.
You already know how quick they are to run from players. Right. But then you see how quick teams move on from players with not even doing anything bad. You know what I mean? Like they it's a big farm system, so they feel like, okay, well, you just have another guy come up from the minor leagues. So it's a tough position, I feel you, bro.
I mean, I would love to see it happen. I would do it.
Definitely.
I would do it, and whatever happens to me, what happens to me, you know, I would know that I stood for something that, you know, I really felt that it should be seen. Because at the end of the day, as baseball players, the number one thing, the best thing about being a baseball player is what MLB lives by right now. The kids are watching. Let the kids play. So that's the future. Those kids, when they see that, they're going to question and ask their parents, why? Why did he do that? Why would someone do something so disturbing, in quotation marks, during the national anthem, and so unorthodox during the national anthem, that's supposed, you know, you're supposed to stand up and have your hand on your heart, like Drew Brees said. You know, why would someone do that? And I think that's when you create change, because like Lou said earlier, racism is taught. You know, you don't grow up being racist. That's not something that you're born with. So, you know, the kids watching you, seeing you do that, I think it has such a longer lasting effect, because, you know, then answers have to be given. And that's when I think people educate each other the most and learn the most about what's really going on, when questions are asked. And I feel that, you know, if it happens, it would be great for the future generations to come.
But the thing about it too, with kneeling during the national anthem, it's crazy how many, when Kaepernick was doing it and other guys around the NFL, it's crazy how every time people talk about it, it's somebody that always brings it back to disrespecting the flag. You know, Kaepernick never tried to disrespect America or the soldiers that fought for America. He was just standing up and, you know, protesting police brutality, but they would always bring it back to, oh, he's disrespecting the soldiers that fought for this country and all that. That's not what that man is doing. Hear him out. Like, why can't people just hear what he, you know, his point? Why did he do it? Hear him out and see exactly why he did it. Don't just cast judgment on him without even knowing why he did it.
And that's the power of media, right? So now it's plastered all over social media. Like, hey, you know, Kaepernick's against, you know, the flag, this and this. And people can't even go then educate themselves on what's going on. They see the screen, it's like, okay, yep, okay, I see it, okay, scroll to the next thing. And so then their mind's already made up, Kaepernick is off. Like, he's against, you know, the flag, against America, and then, bam, next thing you know, he's out. It shouldn't be that way. It should not be that way. It shouldn't be that way at all.
And then you have a president that's telling the sons of bees that they should be fired because of doing a peaceful protest, which is crazy. How do you have the leader of the free world? Yeah, and you know, I know my mom's listening right now, and she hates when I get involved in American politics. But this isn't American politics, Mom. This is good and bad. Someone that is a leader of the free world should not be saying the things that he says. I can't vote. I can't. But I feel like my opinion still matters to some degree because it's just unacceptable as a world leader. It is unacceptable the way he's handled every situation regarding the protests, the kneeling, Kaepernick 4 years ago, holding a Bible upside down in front of a church for a photo op after tear gassing and pushing peaceful protesters away. To me, it is absolutely like horrendous. Like I know Will, I saw Will today went out and vote in the prelims today, preliminaries. So, you know, that's something that I encourage all Americans to do, you know, educate yourselves and vote on the right person.
I was going to mention, just from a minor league standpoint, obviously major league teams are all in big cities, big diverse cities for the most part. And it's a huge stadium with, you know, 30, 40, sometimes 50,000 people. But from a minor league standpoint, sometimes you're in these smaller towns, that are less diverse and have different viewpoints. I'll put it politely. I would think the intimidation factor against doing something like kneeling in some minor league baseball towns would really be overwhelming. And the reaction of the crowd would, I think, could get scary. And that's another thing that, like, it just makes you just shake your head at how far we have to go, that there are definitely pockets with minor league teams that I think it would be really scary if a black player knelt before a game, before a single A game or a double A game. Do you guys agree?
Yeah, I agree 100%. You know, I'm sure Will could agree with this, attest to this. But I remember, you know, driving down from Lake County, Ohio to Lynchburg, Virginia. And when I got there, in the first few days I spent there, you could like look around and tell that, you know, this is somewhere where I have to be very careful of everything I do. You know, being a black guy, driving a nice car, in an area like that is a red flag. You know, as sad that as that is to say, you learn quickly, you know, I can't act up, I can't do anything wrong. You know, if I was to get pulled over here, I have to be very respectful, you know, just try to make it peacefully, you know. And like you say, you know, I personally could see the backlash that an African-American player would get in Lynchburg, Virginia for doing something like that. And it's not anything against, you know, the vast majority of people that live in Lynchburg, Virginia, but it's just, you know, what I felt when I got there. And what I felt when I got there is that, you know, somewhere that, you know, things like that, it would take some time for that something like that to be accepted.
I would say, too, like, there are going to be places where, you know, you're playing in the middle of nowhere. And especially if you're away and they could know where your hotel is, that we don't have security. So that's something, again, like you have to take those things into account, which is sad. That's the world we live in. But that's why, again, I'm not sure too much if you can really do that in the minor leagues because of that, you know, that fear.
Makes a lot of sense. So the statements have come out from every league, and you know, you guys know, and you probably shake your head at them a little bit. It's the black background with the white print and all kind of the same general things of different degrees. It took Major League Baseball 9 days to come out with a statement, which is appalling in my opinion. But I will say this, and I'll look to Lou for this one. The Tampa Bay Rays statement, I think, was, and I don't know if you read it, Lou, but I think it was the number one statement I've seen from a team or a league. And there's the reason for that is, A, they mentioned the name, George Floyd. They said the name, which a lot of people didn't do. They said that he was killed. And they actually did something about it by announcing that they were donating money, $100,000. So they actually took an action as opposed to call it what it is, these BS statements that you get from a lot of these teams. So Lou, did you have a sense of pride in your organization when you saw that?
Definitely, Tim. That's the Rays way. That's why we're going to win the World Series. You know what I mean? Because we got good people all throughout the organization from top to bottom that truly care about everyone as a person. You know, we're a small market team, so we don't have the big superstars, we don't have the big stadium and all the fans. So we really cling to family. So I feel like that's the number one reason why we just treat everyone the same and we just love each other unconditionally. And I was happy to see the statement that they put out, and you know, good job to the Rays, man. I'm proud to be a Ray.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So I think the final thing here, we've been going for a while, is, you know, what's next? How do we fix this? And we're actually already seeing some changes take place. Minneapolis has announced that the plans for drastic changes to the police force out there. Today in New York, they repealed Section 50A of the Civil Rights Law that prevented past history of misconduct from becoming public. So we're going to know if these police officers had past experiences and past issues in their past. Mayor de Blasio announcing shifting some money from the police department to social programs to try to fix these problems in a different way. So this is all good stuff, guys. There's a long way to go, though. But Will, do you feel, you know, how do we keep going? How do we keep it going? Because 2 weeks has been great. But, you know, in maybe 2 weeks from now or a month from now, the protests are probably gonna quiet down. You're not gonna see them every day on the news, but we got to keep the changes coming. So how do we do it?
To be honest, that's a question that I've been trying to answer myself. And I think one of the biggest things is obviously vote, because there is where we're gonna make the most change. And there will, you know, we can feel comfortable about the direction that the country is heading. But to be honest, that's why I'm here, because I've been asking my friends too, like, what is gonna be the sign of change? You know, what needs to happen and what has to be in place? I mean, that's the same question I would ask too.
What do you guys say? I know you guys can't vote, Todd. You mentioned you can't vote. You wish you could. So what do you do? You're not here right now. You're in the Bahamas, but when you get back to the United States, you know, what's your thought process to try to keep helping this thing move along?
I think number one thing would be to, you know, for us to continue using our platform. You know, so a lot of people out there that's watching, you know, especially a lot of young kids, you know, the future. Go back to the future, like what I said earlier, because those are the ones that's going to make a change. You know, if you invest in the future, it's going to pay off one day. So, you know, it's educating everyone in our age group, everyone that's older than us, and just using our platform as a voice to create the change, to educate. And I think education and knowledge is power. And what comes with education and knowledge is what's going to bring about change. Now, a lot of people just don't know. They never took the time out to learn. They never took the time out to ask questions. And I think now, you know, a lot of people are starting to ask why. A lot of people are starting to realize that what's going on and what has been going on for hundreds of years is not right. And, you know, a lot of people, the people that don't ask the questions and don't try to learn and adapt and evolve, you know, those are the ones that you see right away that stick out like a sore thumb. You know, I'm sure everyone's seen the videos of, you know, the white ladies in the gas stations and the stores and the parking lots talking to, you know, people of color. And then you have the white cyclist that grabbed the signs from the little white girl, you know, stuff like that. You now start to see it and see how bad it really has been. I think that's where the education part comes in. That's where, you know, us using our platform, you know, we can reach so many. And I think that's a part of our responsibility as professional athletes, as baseball players, you know, to use our voice, because at the end of the day, our voice will definitely go a lot further than what we do on the field, and it will last a lot longer.
Right. So it's like to educate yourself, and then to continue to have those conversations and stuff like that as time goes on. Oh, yeah, for sure.
Keep it going. Yeah, for sure. Definitely educating is definitely key, Todd. And just keep it going. Keep the movement going. Keep it alive. You know, let's keep it in everyone's face so they can't ignore it. You know what I mean? Like Todd was saying, it's always going to be people that don't agree. But once we get majority on our side, and we will be all right. You know what I mean? We won't touch everyone. Everyone won't have sympathy or, you know, feel for us. But once we continue to just shift our thinking, we'll be all right. But I feel like also it needs to be some laws and stuff in place too that actually like scare people or scare police officers from killing unarmed black people or even anyone. You know what I mean? Even if you a white kid, he shouldn't even be killed. You know what I mean? No race help should be murdered, you know, for just something so petty. So it just has to be some laws put in place that police officers can't really abuse their power, you know, and just keep this thing going, man. This is a beautiful movement. Let's not get tired. Let's not get weary. You know what I mean? We made a lot of strides so far, and I look forward to continuing this movement and continuing to touch lives and getting people to understand who didn't understand previously, and, you know, just having an open conversation, an honest conversation, and, you know, just hearing everyone's side. And we can definitely learn a lot more and, you know, be a better country and be able to help each other more. And, you know, I feel like we'll see the world becoming a better place after we continue to just listen and pay attention and not be afraid to learn, or like Will would say, like step out your comfort zone.
And going off of what Lou said, you know, something that he said really resonated with me is that, you know, all of us are connected. All of us are like, you know, love needs to be spread every day. And it just reminded me of a book that I read a long time ago. It was a book that a friend gave me. And it's called The Alchemist. I'm sure a lot of people have read it.
Yeah, I might read it right now.
Might have heard about it. And yeah. Reading The Alchemist, it was one of the first books that I read at the time that got me into reading books, because I was never into reading books my whole life. And reading this book, this guy goes on this journey. It's this crazy journey. I don't want to give the exact details. And as you're reading this book, you're trying to piece together everything that happens to him in this book. It's all tied to life. And in the end of the
book...
Wait,
you can't ruin it now. Hey.
No, I'm not going to ruin it for you. I'm not going to ruin it for you. But at the end of the book, what the book really taught me is that the language of the world, you know, no matter where you're from or part of the world, you have different languages, different lingos. You say things differently. You do things differently. But what the book taught me is that love and spreading love is the universal language for the world. And that's all that this boils down to, is just loving one another, like Will said, you know, back to the Bible. Love thy neighbor like you love thyself. And that's important. That's what the book taught me. And I feel that that's the answer to everything. You know, just spreading love and having love there.
Love always wins, man. Love always wins. You can't beat it.
Love wins. Love wins. Yeah, love wins.
Let's keep having these conversations right here, this podcast right now. We have an African-American, two guys from the Bahamas, and a white guy that grew up in New England.
And a Jets fan.
These are the types of conversation. And a Jets fan producing it.
So he bashed you. He said that quarterback sucked.
For sure. You know Raz ain't gonna like that talk.
Oh man.
We had to end on that note for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Nah, but Tim, to be honest with you, I appreciate you like just taking the time out to like learn, and like you could easily like turn a blind eye, you know what I mean, and be like, all right, well, my life is good. I don't have to worry about this, but you really want to make a difference, Tim. I appreciate you for that, man. Honestly.
Yes, sir, Tim.
Yeah, Tim. Shout out to
sir. Shout out
to Patsy Mike.
All right. That's going to do it for this edition. Will, thanks so much for coming on, man. That was great.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, Tim. Thanks, y'all. PBO.
Bro, appreciate you.
Yes, sir. Willie Beeman.
All right. That's going to do it for another edition of the Paradise Vibes Only podcast. Thanks for tuning in. We hope that you enjoyed this episode, and we hope you have these conversations going forward as well. Thanks for tuning in.
Paradise Vibes Only. Paradise Vibes Only.